Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hyperthetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hyperthetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hyperthetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey everyone, Kristen here. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2024. We have a pretty exciting month ahead because this is the month where we share with you the awesome interviews that we got to do with some of the cast and creators of Slayers. Today, you'll hear our conversation with Chris Golden and Amber Benson, the writers, directors, and Amber, of course, one of the stars of the production. On the 17th, you'll hear our conversation with James Leary, aka Clem. And on the 31st of January, you'll get to hear my conversation with Leia DeLeon Hayes, who plays Indira. All of that, as always, on BufferingCast.com. Just click on calendar and you'll get our full production schedule. And before we go into today's episode, I would like to let you all know that we have entered the final round of voting on the Sexual Tension Awards from The X-Files Season 1. We are down to just three contenders. We've got Scully and Mulder in Tombs. We've got All of Us and Casual Mulder from Fallen Angel. And of course, we have Dr. Scully and Da Silva from ICE. Who will win the Sexual Tension Award to take them all? You can decide. BufferingCast.com/STA. Cast your vote. A massive thank you, as always, to Emily McLongstreet, who has been running our brackets for the Sexual Tension Awards since as long as I can remember. So Emily, thank you for bringing us this joy. All of you, go vote. And without further ado, please, let's head on into this conversation with Chris and Amber. Listen, today we have a pretty special conversation. We've been talking about Slayers, a Buffyverse story for the last several weeks. We are all beside ourselves excited that the universe has been returned to us. And today we have the honor and privilege of speaking to the two folks who really brought it here, wrote it. Amber Benson, you are here with us. Chris Golden, you are here with us. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you.
Oh, we're so happy to be here.
We are desperate to know, as I'm sure many people out in the world are as well, if you could talk to us a little bit about where this idea came from, how it got started, how the ball got rolling, how the two of you came together. Can you set the scene for us? How did we get here?
The first single-celled organism crawled from the...
Beautiful.
You know, for me, so there are two different questions there, Jenny. I mean... So the superhero origin story of me and Amber as the Wonder Twins goes back to actually I think Amber was 22, and my website and Amber's website.
Don't give our ages away.
Yeah, listen, you know what?
It was last
you
year.
Always, you throw your age out there. It's fine. The same young woman was doing both of our websites. Her name is Allie Costa. And I think Allie was 16 at that time. I was coming out to LA for, I don't remember what for, pitches or whatever. And Allie said, you know, you definitely need to meet Amber. So we had this lunch and Amber comes in with like this squad, and it was Amber and Allie and Amber's sister, Danielle, and a couple of other people. You know, we got along pretty well. And then we were out to dinner the next time I was in LA with a big group of people, including Amber's mom, Diane. And Diane pulled me aside and said, you know, Amber writes too. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's awesome. Like, what is she? Well, she wrote these plays, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, I'd love to read them, you know. And then I said, Amber, we should write a comic book together. And yes. So I read the plays, including her play Albert Hall, which is phenomenal. And then we ended up writing a few Willow and Tara comics together for Dark Horse. And that was the beginning of many, many years of collaborating. Because since then we've done two novels, a couple of novellas. We did Ghosts of Albion for the BBC Online, an animated series, and we've done other comics. So basically I had been talking to Lydia Sharma, who was the exec at Audible UK. And we were chatting and she told me that they had these rights. And I said, well, obviously Amber and I need to be the people who do this thing, which excited her, but also, you know, to cut to the end of the story, I've been saying all along that had it not been for her saying, yes, that's a great idea, we should do that, I don't think this thing would ever have existed, because I can't imagine the cast all agreeing to do it if Amber hadn't been behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Amber wrote it with me and because we directed it together and they knew that they were in her hands, I think that's why we got yeses, and I just don't think it would exist otherwise.
Amber, I'm just wondering, like, how that felt for you, how it felt to sit in this seat on this project in a different way than you really ever have before.
Well, I never would have sat in this seat if not for Chris. Chris held my hand through the whole of it because I was nervous about it. There was a lot of baggage associated with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, not just for me, but for the other actors as well. And knowing that it wasn't just all on me, that I had Chris and then Casey Wayland, who was our other co-director and producer, who did all of the incredible posts. He and his team make this sound like $1 million. They just did such mm-hmm. a beautiful job. And then having, you know, BBC UK, Lydia and Meg and Marielle over there, I had such a great support system that I felt like we could do this, we could do it well. And like Chris always says, we could give better storylines for some of the characters that maybe didn't get the best endings on the original television show. And so knowing that we could do that, that gave me the impetus to say yes to this. And I'm really glad I did, because it feels like overarching sort of vibe from everybody who listens to it, that we've kind of told people it's okay to come back into the water, that there was some stuff that happened and we were all not sure how to feel about it. And now we can come back to Buffy. We've wiped the slate clean. And like having Indira, this new Slayer, we are starting over fresh, and we are building on the shoulders of great things that came from great people, but we are putting a new spin on it. And I think it makes it feel safe again.
Yeah. Since you brought up Indira, I'm just going to go over to that for a moment, because obviously Jenny and I can only speak for ourselves, but we are just delighted and so excited about the entrance of Indira into the Buffyverse. And I imagine that as the two folks that were at the helm of writing this character, that it felt pretty precious and pretty important, because when you have Spike and Tara and, you know, all of these characters that folks know, you're starting with a history. But with Indira, you're creating this from the ground up. So I would love to hear from both of you about the process of crafting Indira on the page.
Well, I mean, I guess I'll jump in and just say, you know, from the very beginning, you know, there were things that we wanted to make sure we did. And one of them was to make sure that we had somebody in the story who was going to be able to be the person who reminds you of the things you need to remember from the original story, but also be able to be your eyes, you know, in a place where you can't see anything, right?
You
can hear. So Indira is this character who can give you, as Amber says, you know, she can give you data dumps. That's part of her job. But also, we needed an actor who could deliver all of that in such a way that it sounded the way it's intended to sound, which is, I'm excited. I've just gotten my dream come true. You know, it's like I'm a Swiftie. My daughter Lily is 21. She's a Swiftie, and I look at Indira and I think it's like if you're like the ultimate Swiftie and you woke up this morning, and Taylor Swift is like, "Hey, do you want to come on tour with me?" And that's what Indira is like, mm-hmm. you know. And then also, of course, like you know, look, the original series existed in an era where people weren't in the business of pointing out things being too white. And you know, those shows, like every other show from that era, basically, or almost every other show from that era, they were not cast with an eye toward diversity. And so from the outset, we wanted to make sure that when we were bringing in new characters, we were bringing in a diverse cast.
Well, it was really funny because we were trying to figure out like, who are we going to cast? Indira is a tough part. She could get saccharine and annoying very quickly if played by the wrong person. And so when Casey, our co-director and producer, was like, I think there's this actress, Leia, De Leon Hayes, who I think would be incredible for this. And the way he talked about her, I assumed that they had worked together before because we were all talking about people we'd worked together with and always bring them on. Like I knew Julia Cho, who plays Ms. Bang. And I was like, oh, we got to bring Julia in. And like, you know, we were doing all this sort of like, let's bring our friends in. It's playtime. Jessica Gardner, who you know, does Amy Madison. Like she's a friend of Chris's and myself. And, you know, so I just assumed Leia was a friend of Casey's and they'd worked together before. So, we get on our first call with Leia, Chris and I, to talk to her. And I'm like, oh, and Casey, da-da-da-da, and Casey, da-da-da-da. And she's just kind of looking at us like, yeah, Casey. And it turns out she does not know Casey at all. He had played the video game that I think she won the BAFTA for.
Yeah.
Yes.
And thought she would be amazing. So we just got freaking lucky that she deigned to even talk to us. Like, what a coup. Like, this was just like yeah. aspirational casting that Casey threw into the ring, and it worked out so beautifully. She's incredible. She's a movie star. Like, that kid is going, like, that woman
she's
is
going places. For she's sure. Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing, like, you know, you have somebody who's just, she's so incredibly naturally talented. And that's the thing. Obviously, she has worked at her craft, no question. You could see she comes in very prepared. She's ready to go. But also, you could just see that it's so natural for her. And yeah, so fortunately, she had been nominated, I think, between the time that she said yes and the time we recorded, she'd been nominated for the BAFTA. And she won it like a couple weeks after we were done. Uh-huh. But it's also, this was the remarkable thing, is that it is a lot. I think she was 18 when we recorded. It is a remarkable thing to come into a room full of people, all of whom know each other and who have worked together in the past or who have connections, and in with characters. So aside from the element of the characters, to be able to come into that room confident and ready to play. And also the minute she started, It was Leia and James and James. And as soon as Leia began, you saw the Jameses sort of sit up straight, like, oh, okay. Or stand up a little straighter. Like, okay, we're not playing here. Okay, let's get to work. And they both commented on it after that, having Leia come in and just kill it made them both go, oh, okay, all right, we're gonna, you know, not that they wouldn't have anyway, but you could see a reaction. And she just did that. So yeah, we were incredibly lucky not only to have somebody of that talented, but having somebody with her confidence level, because how do you come into that room? You're the one newbie who has to now play off of all of these existing relationships.
Yeah.
So it was great. It was beautiful to see.
And she, you know, was not like a big fan of Buffy. Like, she wasn't coming in with this like history. Like, we were like, okay, well, these are the, you know, we were explaining like, this is the world, this is the mythology. And so she was, it was kind of fun because it was like, we were rediscovering the show through her a little bit. And that was really lovely. And the fact that anybody can listen to this, even if you're not a fan, you know, like, this is your first taste of Buffy. And you can follow everything because of Indira and Leia's performance as Indira.
Well, and again, she loved to remind everybody that she wasn't born, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever watch the show? I wasn't born yet.
Probably served well, because I imagine that if you had someone in the room who was a huge fan of Buffy that was trying to play that part in that room full of that cast, it wouldn't have gone super well, you know. It was the overwhelm.
Well, we did have our two main folks from Audible UK, Lydia and Meg, who was our publicity guru. They were both massive, massive Buffy fans, and they were. It was incredibly helpful to have them there, actually. But they held off. The only time you could tell, because they're very British, so the only time you could really tell was when they, if they got near James in any way, they would blush deeply.
No, the best part was when James was recording like those opening like noir sort of like opening monologues. And he's doing it in this very sexy vampire-y voice. And everybody in the sound booth is like bright red,
sweating,
tittering, sweating, fanning themselves. Yeah, it was pretty funny. He just does that naturally. I think it's, you know, once he's in the Spike mode, he is just in it. And then you put him with Juliet. Oh my God. The two of them together, it's like just like, like sparky. When they're in the same room together, it just sparks.
Lord, it really does. I don't know if you remember this, but I was standing between them at Comic-Con as they played off each other as Spike and Drusilla, and I probably will never recover from that moment.
And we are so appreciative of you stepping in and moderating our panel at New York Comic-Con, especially in the height of the SAG after strike and having to be very mindful about like how we were talking about Slayers. And so having you there to sort of guide us, be our captain was really helpful. We really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, it was my true honor and privilege. I would like to, there's some general things that we'll still go back and talk about, but I'm wondering, Amber, about your relationship to witchcraft in relation to the story here. I've been paying attention because I know that you've written a lot about witches, and I think I recently saw that you sort of did a guided tour, or like spearheaded a guided tour, right? And so I'm wondering, because, you know, when we go back, obviously we're all fairly familiar with the television show, and a lot of the spells in the mythology are, when you go and you dig deeper, it's like, wait, what was that even? Like, where did those words and things come from? But in this series, you know, like any, and I know at this point that anytime I see like a list of gods or goddesses or what have you, that I'm going to look them up and they're going to be anchored in something. And Chris, I don't mean to leave you out of this. I just know Amber witchcraft is like a connection. I would love to hear about how you brought that specifically into the universe.
Well, I a friend of mine, Russell Brown, has a nonprofit called Ford LA, and it's all about like the residential architectural treasures of Los Angeles. And so for the last, is it 4 years now, I've done like a spooky trail for Halloween. That's always kind of, we call it the witch trail. And we take these beautiful architectural, creepy looking homes in Los Angeles. And and Fort does like a trail that you can follow. That's very family friendly. And sometimes like we'll have, you know, like I wrote poems for each of the houses that are kind of creepy. And there's like another one where we had actors read bits of like fairy tales. And it's a really fun thing that we've been doing every year. And it's for a great nonprofit. But I do love magic and witches specifically. And Chris does too. I feel like Chris has spent as much time digging around and spells and gods and goddesses, actually more than me even on this.
I mean, I think, you know, we could spend an hour just talking about how fraught it is to write about witches or witchcraft in a fictional world, given what the real world, you know, the varieties of witches and witchcraft are in the real world. But I mean, I love folklore and I love mythology and all of that stuff. And I find that with writing spells, you know, because I've had sorcery and witchcraft and a million comics and books that I've written, it's just got to feel like it could have been something.
Mm. You know?
And so, you know, you start down, Amber, jump in if I'm, you know, but you start down a sort of research rabbit hole, and you kind of accumulate things that feel like they should go together. Particularly like whatever the spell is that you want to try to accomplish. It also helps that Amber and I wrote a bunch of spells in foreign languages.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Buffy is like, yeah, like just rotten with lots of weird borrowing from all over the place, the TV yeah show. Like, I mean, yeah, if you can think of it, some weird Assyrian like god and there, you know, so that I think that amalgamation of all the different, I think that really helped us when we were working on this.
Yeah. But what blew me away was the fact that we had all these spells, and there are spells in German, in Latin, in I want to say Swedish, Norwegian. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
No, and there's definitely Swedish. Poor Emma Caulfield.
Yeah.
What a mensch. That she
Emma comes in and she's like, yeah, I can, I'll just read it in that language. I'll sound it out. I was just like, okay, great.
There was Romanian. And in fact, one of the guys at the studio where we're recording is Romanian. So he came in and helped with pronunciation. And then one of Casey's production team spoke, it's a dead language, sort of, or non-spoken language, but she knew Latin. So she came in and helped with the Latin, and yeah, we were very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, you put it in the script and you kind of, I mean, it was such a rush to the end. Which is a whole other story, but it was, you put it in the script and then you kind of forget it's there. So then the actors come in the day of, and fortunately they've done their research or they've figured it out. It's sort of like, yeah, here's some Swedish, work on that, would you?
When you say it was a rush to the end, are you talking about the recording process, the writing process? How long did this whole thing take?
We started before COVID.
Yeah.
Ah.
But yeah, so we've been working on this a long time. We've had to keep it secret for a really long time, which has been really hard. Both of us wanted to tell, and we couldn't. It was very frustrating. And Chris will tell you, like, that we took a lot of time with the pilot. And then, Chris, what happened to us?
Well, just, you know, the pilot, it took forever for Disney to give their notes on the pilot. Mm. And when they did, their notes were actually not very difficult or complicated. And then we did the second episode, and there was a similar sort of long gap of time. And so just waiting for the notes on those two episodes took so long that at that point, Amber and I basically said, okay, look, we're just going to write them all. We're going to write the rest. And so the other seven episodes were all written very fast.
Breakneck speed.
Breakneck speed, yes. Because we could not afford the time that it would have taken to wait for each thing.
Yeah.
And so Audible and Disney got them in batches after that. So we were in quite a hurry as we got, you know, toward the end.
And we didn't have a ton of time in the studio either. What we had, was it 6 days, 5 days, 6 days, something like that?
We had seven. We had seven recordings.
Seven?
Yeah.
It's all seven a blur recordings. In my mind.
There were bits and pieces that were done. It's like we did, so the stuff that Tony Head did that wasn't with Fina, who plays Olivia, was done with Tony live from London. So we were all in the studio in LA and he was in London live with us. But the stuff that he had with Fina was recorded separately prior to us going into the studio with that, and the Danny Strong stuff and a number of other things that were sort of like recorded by actors in London or other places was taken care of that way. And there was a lot of the sort of monsters and demons and things were recorded after. But the meat of the whole thing was done in that 7 days with everybody in the studio together.
Poor Juno. Juno Dawson is amazing. Just knocks it out of the park. I think Juno maybe was our first record.
Yeah, I think she was.
So Juno is like she doesn't have, there's nobody else. This is just Juno recording.
Wow.
Alone and just kills it.
Wow. So the Miranda Spike scenes that we hear are not, they're not in the same room. That's James playing on the recording. Wow. That's incredible.
It was incredible. And I will say again, Amber, we always come back to wanting to make sure we give credit to Casey too, because, you know, Casey put together the book of basically the spreadsheet of lunacy of the order of scenes that were going to be when they were going to be recorded, so that, you know, when we had this person in the studio, so everything could be worked out. And thank God, because there's just no way in hell.
Yeah, the math there is wild. The math that you have to like unlock to figure out what you need before you do this thing, but you also have to do this thing before you do that other thing. That is serious.
Bananas.
In the room, I mean, not that, obviously the creative process goes all the way back to the beginning when you're putting pen to paper, so to speak. But in the room, that creative process, having the actors there, Amber, in your case, wearing like every hat that could possibly be put yes. on your head. I would love to hear at first, like, what are the things that surprised you most about that process, being in the room with folks and recording the things you had written?
I was very lucky because I could just focus on the directing stuff until I had to get up there. And then I could let it go and just know that I was in good hands. Casey and Chris 100% were on top of what I was doing performance-wise, because I could not even really think about what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was just like, okay, now I got to go sit back down. We're doing a scene that I'm not in. Thank God. You know, there was so much. It really feels, like I said, like a dream. It feels like it happened to somebody else, and I am now reaping the benefit of this incredible process. But I really do credit Chris and Casey and Lydia and Megan Marielle from the BBC UK also, because they really were on top of anytime I couldn't be there to like direct, or, you know, they were on top of what I was doing performance wise and what everybody else was doing.
Yeah, it was really nice to have the Audible folks in the room, in the booth, because there were times when, you know, for instance, Althania, who tried to figure out how do we pronounce that name again? But they had some Buffy knowledge that was really helpful. Some of the nerdiest Easter eggs came from them, which we appreciate very much. But also, I think, Amber, I totally understand what you're saying about not being able to focus other than on the scene we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Because we had the spreadsheet, and then we're following, moving from scene to scene to scene. Okay, we could take a 10-minute break. Everybody go pee, go get a drink, come back.
Yeah.
Break for lunch, come back. And it was, everything was rushed. But it was rushed in a very ordered fashion, because
yes.
it had been worked out in advance. That said, it was like every time we're like, Amber, you're in this scene. Amber would be like, get up, you know, run to her mic and just do it, because then you have to move on to the next thing. And every time, Amber, I remember, like, every time you'd finish a scene, you'd look over at the table with me and Casey, like, are we good? because you're just like not thinking, because you can't spend a lot of time thinking mm-hmm. about it. Amber spends a lot of time talking about how great Emma is in this show. And I know we should talk about every single member of the cast and how amazing they are, because they are amazing. And Emma is amazing. But every time she does it, Amber's forgetting that she did the same thing Emma did, which is different versions of your character.
Yeah.
In playing off of each other. And so just want to make sure, because Amber won't usually allow give her flowers, and she deserves them all.
Yeah.
Well, I did get to work with a very special performer, Mr. Pickles,
Mr. Pickles,
who was played by Casey Whelan. Who did it as a joke. And then Chris was like, you have to be Mr. Pickles.
He was like, I'll get real monkey noises for that. And after he did it, we were like, no, you won't.
It was amazing. So I really did have the best performer to work off of with Casey's Mr. Pickles, and with, you know, getting to do all that with Juliet was incredible. Talk about somebody who actually knows the show and knows her character backward and forward. Juliet found any inconsistency. She just knows this, like it is just part of her. Mm-hmm. So she gave us lots of like little saving grace moments where she's like, actually, that's not how that was in the show. And actually that doesn't work. And can we rewrite this? And she was always right every time.
Wow.
It's incredible. Yeah. And her performance is just, I mean, spooky and dark and messed up.
Oh yeah. It's the Drusilla. It's like the chewiest, most delicious bits of Drusilla are all there when Juliet is playing the alternate reality Drusilla for us, for sure. Ooh, this is not a real interview question, but we just recorded an episode where I was like, Miss Bang and Drusilla were fully girlfriends at some point. Was that written in, or is that just in my headcanon?
That's in your headcanon, but it could have happened.
I always kind of felt like there was like a weird sexual tension between them. So it makes total sense to me, because you don't just leave someone at the bottom of the ocean unless they've really, Drusilla just kills them. So there has to be some connection there. We got some prequel here, Chris, that we got to work on.
Prequel, exactly. Let's get the second season agreement first, please.
Hey, Kristen.
Oh, hey, Jenny.
You know how we're always obtaining new lotions and creams for our faces?
You know, I really do. We talk about skincare more than anyone probably has a right to know.
It's true. If you, like us, are tired of cycling through ineffective skincare trends and overcomplicated routines, then let us tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
And here's the deal. The reason that OneSkin is very different from anything else is because they use a proprietary OS1 peptide. If there was time, I would play the medical doctor jingle for myself just for saying that. It's the first ingredient that is proven to actually switch off the aging cells that cause the lines and the wrinkles and the thinning skin. And they have a bunch of studies to back this up. We've both received their products and just started using them, and they are awesome. I also love the fact that they come with refillable inserts. So you sort of get your plastic container one time, and then if you like the product and you keep going, they just send you the little packet that goes inside. So if you want to learn more about them, you should check them out at oneskin.co. They are the world's first skin longevity company. They focus on cellular aspects of aging and keep your skin looking and acting healthier for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code BUFFERING at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off at oneskin.co with code BUFFERING. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Do you have a picture in your mind of where you want to go with the season two? I'm knocking on wood. I'm crossing my fingers.
Yes. I mean, Amber, you talk about it too, but we definitely have a lot of thoughts. There are members of the cast who have a lot of thoughts.
Yes.
And want to share those thoughts, which we encourage because, you know, they had no input really the first time around. So we're happy to have their thoughts. There are a lot of moving parts as far as like if X then Y. So there's a potential surprise guest for season two that if we got that surprise guest would take certain other elements of what we do. And no, it's not Sarah. I'm gonna play the character again. So there are a bunch of moving parts. So we haven't actually sat down to plot anything out yet. We're waiting for the green light before we do that because there are a few things we need to know before we start. But we do have certain things we want to do with various characters. I personally have a grand plan for Tara. That season one was just laying the groundwork for the overall grand plan for Tara.
I was just on the phone with James Marsters. I've talked to Emma, Charisma. Everybody is excited to do a season two. Everybody has thoughts. Everybody, like, Emma's so sweet. She's just like, I think we need some singing. Can we have some singing?
She wants Anya to basically just be like writing Taylor Swift-esque songs and...
oh my God.
So we have a lot of fun things to play with when we get a season two. I've stopped saying yes.
When?
I'm projecting into the future that we will have a season two. It would be amazing. And we love this cast. It's very much about continuing to service this cast. It's not really going to be about bringing in other Correct. People to then, because this is our core group and this is our team and we love them very much. And we feel like there's so much story to tell for these characters. So anybody else that we bring in, it'll be more cameo-esque than big arcs for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because it's about loyalty and it's about like, this is our crew. These are our people and being respectful of that.
To get this group of people in a room together, to watch them work, to watch them work together, you know, we want to do more and continue to explore those characters, these actors, and do new and interesting things. And the cameo I was talking about is not somebody who's ever been on the show.
I mean, we definitely would like to talk to Seth about joining us because he popped by the studio randomly when we were recording. He was there to do something else. And he's like, wait, what is happening in this studio with all my people?
Why wasn't I invited? Yeah.
So I was like, well, we ran out of budget, dude. We would love, you know, we love Seth. Seth is one of the funniest humans around. And we would love to have him come and play with us, you know, mostly because he just came in and was like, this is super cool. I'm so happy you guys are doing this. He's just like such a kind, good-hearted human.
Truly, perhaps like the best male character ever on television. You know what I mean? Like just everyone loves Oz. Just...
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know. When I first came on the show, everyone was like, we love Oz.
Yeah, yeah.
Go away. No, I told you, Chris, that at the first posting board party I went to, our friend Wendy, I went into the bathroom and there were a couple women in there already, including our friend Wendy. And they didn't see me come in. I just was in the stall, but I could hear them talking. They were talking about how much they love Oz and they wish this Tara character would go away. And why can't Oz come back?
Oh my God.
Brutal.
This is before I ever knew her. And then of course I have to, I'm like, do I come out of the toilet? Do I stay in the toilet? Definitely need to wash my hands vigorously when I come out. Don't want to be judged.
I feel like you should have just thrown down right then.
I'll get you guys out. No, I came out of the bathroom and I'm like washing my hands and they all kind of look over. They were humiliated. They felt so bad because they weren't talking about me. Everyone loves Oz. Yeah. That's just how it is.
Okay, so we talked about Indira. We don't have time to talk about all of the characters that re-enter this universe for us, but I think, you know, to what you were saying earlier, Amber, about certain characters in the Buffyverse meeting ends that much of the fandom and I'm sure much of the cast and crew were unhappy with. Mm-hmm. Cordelia and Charisma is you know, that is a huge heartbeat of, I think, the whole project. And so I would love to hear you both talk about that. And specifically, you know, you're with all of these characters, you're taking a character who has a history and a past. And for some of them, they're in the reality that we knew them in. But with Cordelia, this is a Cordelia that has elements of the Cordelia Chase we knew, but this Cordelia is a Slayer. And so I guess I would like to take us to Cordy Corner right now and hear your thoughts about the creation of this and all of that.
So here's the thing. Cordelia has always been one of my favorite characters, for sure. And Charisma was one of the most interesting people that I met when I was first involved with writing about and writing the books related to the show and all of that. You know, being somebody on the outside watching, I just kept feeling like there were so many things I wanted for that character and wanted to happen with that character. I felt like she was so rife with potential. Because I also think that Charisma's abilities are, for some reason, no matter how great she was, I still think she was often underestimated as an actor, mm-hmm. watching the show. Because mm-hmm. the things that she does so well, so often, like, is it drama? Is it comedy? It's right there in that sweet spot. It's very hard to do. So she really, you know, is gifted. And honestly, not only were we saying, please come back and be this character again, but please come back and play a version of this character that no one has ever seen before and isn't like the one that you played before. And she was anxious about it. You know, when she's reading the scripts and when we went in to start recording, she was definitely anxious about knowing this character because this was not the Cordelia she knew. So it was about that. But what was great was it just because she had also been up for the role of Buffy. She was one of the last actresses before Sarah was cast who was up for the role, but she ended up as Cordelia instead. And the minute she started playing this part, this Cordelia, she was like completely owning it. So all of her anxiety just probably was still there. But the minute that she started, she was amazing. And then we got to see in the relationships between Cordelia and Indira and Cordelia and Anya. And when she sees the other world's Giles for the first time and these things, get these moments from her that are like, these are so great because they're the kinds of things we probably would never have gotten from the original version of the character. So Amber and I were super passionate about giving her a second life in a very real way, that character. So
and the same for Anya. I mean, Emma is a screwball comedian. Why she is not in every rom-com, I don't know. She's incredible in Timer. She's so good, so willing to just do, and like when she did the Jasper puppy voice. I like your story about it, Chris. You were
well, yeah, I mean, we didn't write that voice thinking that she was going to be the one doing the voice.
The puppy.
or that it would be modulated in some way, somehow. But basically, we're in there and she's like, well, maybe it's something like this. And she's like testing various things out. And she starts doing it immediately. I think I even said out loud, Amber. I think I said out loud.
You did.
They said, no, that's too ridiculous. And I paused and I went, actually, that's perfect. That is exactly the right amount of ridiculous because it's completely absurd. But it's
and you brilliant. Heard it in real life.
she did
it on stage at New York Comic Con. No, but the same with Anya. We wanted to do something different with Anya and Tara. We want These were characters that we felt needed something different. I think the biggest reason to do the alternate universe stuff was to have that ability to do something different with the characters without messing with the canon of what happened in the show. Mm-hmm. These are not the same characters. That even if they seem like the same characters, they are not. And so they have a different story, a different arc, a different history. And that allowed us to do lots of neat things like Cordelia the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now you've seen them as they are now. But the thing is, like, how they got to who they are now in that parallel is really interesting to me. I'm sure we won't really, you know, we're not going to do a flashback or prequel if we do a season two, when we do a season two. But I'm really intrigued by that question of, like, this is a world where maybe there's a Buffy Summers, but she was never the Slayer and none of these people have ever met her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a listener, we're interested in that too. I would love to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, when Cordelia became the Slayer, what's that story like? All very interesting to me.
and we do have to talk about the incredible comedic chops of James Leary.
Oh,
because without Clem, and he does the drama just as beautifully. He's like he is a walking tragedy comedy mask person. Like, he does them both so well. But without those comedic beats that he brings to the project, I don't think it would work. And Danny Strong does that as well. Both of them have these really funny moments. But Jimmy, I mean James, because he's not Jimmy Leary anymore. He's grown up, and we're all grown up. Oh my gosh, it's James Leary. He's incredible. I mean, the stuff he did, and the look on people's faces when he would, like, do these crazy Clem things just was. It was so much fun to be in studio to watch him just go.
Well, it was great too, as, you know, he's somebody who has been a friend of ours for a very long time. You know, he had lots of fans who loved him, but he hadn't worked one-on-one with, I think really just James Marsters, right? Of the people who were there. I'd have to go back and look, but.
I can't remember if I had a scene with him, but he would be around.
Yeah,
because he had the softest ears. You guys don't even know. Clem ears.
Yeah, but so the thing is, like, for him to be playing a much larger role that put a lot of weight on his shoulders to supply all of the comedy, all of the sidekick energy that you wanted, but also to get these moments of, like, heart-wrenching, like, humanness out of this character. One of my favorite things for the whole recording was watching the other members of the cast reacting to him and being like, oh, okay, he's really good. And having him feel like he was getting that response from them and giving him, like, getting that reward of being appreciated by his castmates. It was a beautiful thing to watch, honestly. And then when we were in New York for Comic-Con, his sons were with him for the weekend, and they're not little kids. One's in high school, one's in college, I think. And having them be able to see him get the kudos that he was getting, I think Amber and I both went up to them and were like, you know, I hope you guys are proud of your dad, because, you know, and they were like, oh, we are. It was great to see, you know. So, yeah, I mean, the whole process was just great. You know, half the reason to do it again is just to, like, get the band back together, you know?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But the two biggest troopers were Tony Head and James Marsters, because Tony was 8 hours ahead of us.
Yep.
So,
oh, my God.
Poor guy is, like, like getting late, and he's, you know, it's morning for us. And it's getting late for him. And he's having to, you know, Zoom in, and he's recording in a studio away from all of us. And I mean, just, like, such a trooper. And he's just always wonderful. It doesn't matter what he does. He's just great. I really could listen to him read a phone book. He's, like, so engaging. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then James Marsters, the biggest trooper, because he was sick. He came in not feeling well, and we ended up putting him in a little ISO booth with windows that could see everybody else.
Mm.
And he was determined. He's like, even if it's not working because of my voice, because I'm sick, he's like, I want to be here for everybody, which is amazing.
Oh,
he's like, we'll just re-record stuff after if I have to. And his stuff was still so great. We barely had to do any re-records.
Yeah.
Because he was even sick was so on point.
Incredible.
He was really sick, but it was important to him to be able to give the performance for the rest of the cast to play off of.
Yeah.
And he thought he was going to come in and then record like 90% of it again. And in the end, only ended up recording a handful of lines, really. But that was that level of support, you know, that, you know, to make sure that everybody, that he gave everyone everything he had to give. And then with Tony, I will say, Amber, like when he first appears on screen in the studio and the rest of the cast was like, oh, and he held up, he had brought his, Mr. Giles placard from the door to the library, or from the desk in the library. So he held it up and, you know, everybody was, it was great. I mean, it was,
oh man.
So good.
Such an incredible team. I mean, talk about like a charmed experience. Mm-hmm. As much of it being run and gun and trying to get it done in a timely manner. We had an incredible group of people we were working with. That doesn't happen very often. Yeah. Really doesn't.
We are so lucky to reap the benefits and to get to sit and listen on the other end.
I know you guys come from like that, the music side of things.
Well, Jenny does. I just ride sidecar.
But we had like incredible composer, Jonathan Dinerstein, who came in and just knocked it out of the park. I mean, I had worked with him on a film called Drones, and John is fabulous. And then I have to plug my my partner, Mike Sawitsky, who is a member of the Eels and this other band, Dispatch. He did our reboot of the opening theme. So we got lucky.
Yeah.
We got really lucky with the music. It's all so good.
The harpsichord theremin cemetery cue like lives rent free in my mind. I'm like washing the dishes and I'm thinking it and humming it to myself. It's so good.
Well, John's wife, Becky, actually is a violinist, and all of the Juliet violin stuff, the Drusilla violins, that is her. Like it's
beautiful.
It's almost like another character.
We've been talking a lot about The Sunlight Spell and Andre Kurgan, and we're wondering like where that came from, if it was inspired by anything, if you just pulled it out of the ether, where good ideas sometimes just hover nearby.
Out of the ether, is that what we're calling our asses these days?
Yeah.
I definitely would say if you're looking for ether, check your ass.
You know, the thing is, the key element, so often it's like there's a question, and then you have to answer the question. And the question is, if Drusilla is the queen of vampires, and she presents a global threat, how does one vampire present a global threat? And we know that she has access to incredibly powerful witchcraft. So the sort of global threat always felt like, oh, well, how do we make being able to command all the vampires in the world, essentially, much more threatening? Well, you make them not have to hide during the day, right? And so that was kind of the thing. And so once you get the answer to that question, then it's like, well, how do you do that?
Yeah, you have to reverse engineer it a little bit.
Yeah.
We were really, you know, very aware of the logic factor. I think that's something Chris and I both like. Good storytelling is good storytelling, and making sure that your rules apply and that you stay on top of them. And we worked really hard. So anything that doesn't follow that, I'll take responsibility for, Chris.
No, that's fine. I'm sure it's me. Yeah.
No.
The Kurgan of it all is so powerful too, because of his, I mean, obviously we only have a bit of his backstory in this, but speaking of like doing the prequel, I've said a couple of times in our pod that like, I would love the Watcher story of Kurgan. Like he seems to embody something that I think is one of the most important elements of the Buffyverse, which is that even the
villainous characters or even the characters who might be the threat have their own reasons for doing what they do. Like, it is grounded in a gray place. It's not a black and white thing. And I love that so far of what we've learned of Kurgan.
Yeah. Well, Kurgan is also that, you know, there's that thing about politicians who get involved in politics because they think they can fix the system from the inside. Mm. And then they get into the system and the system is so corrupt. Mm. And that's like Kurgan wanting to do something about making vampires be able to live amongst us because that'll solve everything. Kumbaya, you know, it'll be great. And then getting like corrupted by contact with all of that.
Yeah.
You know, but that is an ongoing theme of the show and an ongoing theme of you know, the best kinds of horror stories and fantasy stories, which is also Tara's story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we very much wanted to make sure that there was a balance for Tara, for the alternate universe version of Tara, because she's such a good-hearted human, and that's very important. And after all the stuff the fans went through with her, we wanted to make sure that that goodness was always there underneath, even if she took a darker turn in our world. And I think we did that. I feel very good about that. But that was very important to me, and I think to Chris and to Lydia, that we maintain that part of the Tara personality, because that is so important.
Tara is being corrupted, but the core of her is not corrupted and is constantly fighting.
Yeah.
You know, fighting to regain, you know, sort of control. And honestly, yeah, like, not to get all too meta, but that's like, that's true about so many of us in real life, is like, we get corrupted by things that are outside us, but the inside, we're like, no, hang on, I got to sort of reset and get back on the right path with this. That should we go forward, when we go forward with a season two, there are grand plans in place for Tara that have nothing to do with her being anything but the best possible version of Tara that we've ever seen.
Amazing.
Nice.
Yes, something that, and I know we're winding down here, but Amber, hearing you talk about, I guess, you know, I was going to say the duality of Tara. I guess it is a duality of Tara, and then there's also Kurgan, but I think it's really beautiful what you said about, you know, that the, or maybe both of you said this, that the goodness in Tara is battling. It just made me think about how, at least at this point, we know that Anya is also battling on behalf of the goodness that she sees in Tara, which I also think is so powerful, because it, you know, it's one of those things where, like, if you're battling on your own, can you win that battle? But if you have, you know, the people who love you sort of saying, but please remember, that has a power to it as well, which, especially when you're talking about Tara and Anya and Cordelia, I mean, come on, like, that's Goosebumps level stuff, you know, that's really powerful.
I think it's part of the longevity of Buffy in general, is this idea of found family, mm-hmm. that we're all looking for our found family. And that I think it happens with the actors in this, like, we all, like, we became a found, like, we were a family again. It was really, really magical. And then for the fans who find their families and are part of our bigger extended family, mm-hmm. I think we have to pay tribute to that. And it is there in this story, that idea of these are the people that will always have your back, even when you fail, because we all fail.
Yeah. Well, on that beautiful note,
mic drop.
Yeah, honestly, thank you both. I
definitely... That's just the ether coming out of my ass.
Yeah. No, but really, thank you both, of course, for being here and talking to us today. And, you know, all of the folks that listen are just going to be delighted to hear these stories. But thank you for bringing the Buffyverse back to us in such a powerful way. Yeah. It's that sentence doesn't do it justice, but it's really a powerful moment for all of us who love these characters and these stories.
It was very healing for all of us, too, who were making it. Oh, thank you, guys.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.